Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's incoming national security advisor, Michael Flynn, reportedly had several telephone conversations with Russia's ambassador on the same day that President Obama ousted 35 Russian diplomats and imposed sanctions in response to Russia's apparent attempts to influence last year's presidential election. Adam Schiff is the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee.
General Flynn's history with Russian TV and his proximity to Putin, at least at the RT dinner, all of that concerns me. There's a lot to be concerned about with how this new administration will approach the Russians.
Trump spokesman Sean Spicer downplayed the significance of any contact Flynn had with Russian officials. Meanwhile, Mr. Trump took to Twitter to renew his vow to release a report on Russia's alleged hacking of last year's presidential election and to do so within 90 days. He also launched another attack against former presidential opponent Hillary Clinton. Democrats left the House of Representatives' first full intelligence briefing on that Russian interference in the November election, upset, they say, with the FBI's leadership throughout the controversy and asking how Congress could move forward. President-elect Trump said that for the first time this week, he believes Russia played a role in the U.S. election. U.S. officials are hailing the latest push by Iraqi forces into Mosul, confirming reports that Iraqi forces now have retaken a key government building from the Islamic State fighters. A U.S. Defense Department official said it was both a symbolic victory and a significant operational victory. This is VOA News. President Obama has ended a controversial policy that had let any Cuban who steps foot on U.S. soil remain in the United States without a visa and become a legal resident. The 22-year-old policy, called Wet Foot, Dry Foot, required Cubans who were caught at sea trying to reach the U.S. to return home but allow those who reached land to stay. Syrian army says Israel has launched a missile strike on a Syrian military base near Damascus that has caused a series of explosions. The army, in a statement, accused Israel of aiding the terrorist groups in Syria with the bombing. State media report the attack was launched from a location in northern Israel. The Israeli military did not comment. Head of the United Nations West Africa Office has said the Economic Community of West African States intends to seek the formal approval of the UN Security Council to deploy troops to Gambia. President Yahya Jammeh refuses to step down and do so next week. ECOWAS has a military force on standby to intervene. The current U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, has a message for the incoming administration of Donald Trump.
The United States needs the U.N. If the U.N. didn't exist, we would be building a global organization with an independent secretariat. We would be trying to mobilize troops from lots of different countries to go to dangerous places to protect civilians.
She said all the other services that the UN provides would have to be created under some other sort of umbrella organization. Lawmakers of Mr. Trump's Republican Party have introduced a bill that would cut U.S. funding to the UN until the UN Security Council repeals a resolution calling on Israel to stop building settlements. Human Rights Watch has released its 2017 report on human rights around the world. VOA's Mariama Diallo.
The 687-page report reviewed human rights practices in more than 90 countries. This is a uniquely troubling time, says Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth, because the global rise of populist leaders poses an extraordinary threat to human rights.
Nativism, xenophobia, racism, Islamophobia, and misogyny are all on the rise. If the voices of intolerance prevail, the world risks entering a dark era.
He says violent terror attacks have generated fear and suspicion, and also an increasing sense that governments and the elite ignore public concern. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
And this is VOA News coming to you from Washington. We'll be right back.
Russ Davis here. Welcome to a celebration of another famous jazz man who passed away far too early. He was born on the 12th of January in 1946 and passed away in 2013. He's the esteemed composer, band leader, producer, and great keyboard player and vocalist, George Duke. Here on Jazz America, we give you the best of jazz, past and present, and conversation with the music makers. And sometimes we have a chance to salute an artist who has his foot in both the past and the future. And George Duke was just one of those artists. Not only was he a fantastic solo artist in his own right, a wonderful arranger and composer and piano player and vocalist, but also an in-demand session player, a band member, and a producer of other people's work. And if you're known by the company you keep, then George Duke was always in great company because he was asked by so many people to work with him. And there's a reason for that, and you'll find out as we talk to George Duke. He was just a warm and wonderful and positive person. Everyone I've ever spoken to said George Duke was just a joy to be around, and I found that to be true as well myself. He worked in jazz fusion and funk, in jazz vocals, in pop vocals, and he worked in the straight-ahead jazz world, too. You'll hear all about it in the next couple of hours. Here's one of those straight-ahead stars that George Duke worked with, Dexter Gordon. Long, tall Dex, the great saxophone player, had George Duke in his band when he played live at the Both And Club in San Francisco in August of 1970. And from that classic session, here's We Dot, Dexter Gordon with George Duke to begin this edition of VOA's Jazz America. We'll be right back. Is the cousin of George Duke doing that beautiful wordless vocal from her album Beautiful Life, the Grammy Award-winning work, the song Tango, sung by George Duke's cousin, Diane Reeves. He produced her very first recording, and he produced that one and played on it as well. So it's great to have in your family a wonderful producer and player like George Duke who can help you on your way, and that's exactly what happened in the career of Diane Reeves. And speaking of vocalists that George Duke has worked with, how about this list? Al Jarreau, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Denise Williams, Michael Jackson, Anita Baker, Philip Bailey, Joe Williams, Natalie Cole, Nancy Wilson, and more. Now, you heard him in the Straight Ahead world, working with Dexter Gordon. He's also worked with the likes of Sonny Rollins, Joe Henderson, Maynard Ferguson, Ray Brown, Cannonball Adderley, Freddie Hubbard, Miles Davis, and others. In demand, no matter what the style of music. And George Duke possessed no musical prejudice whatsoever. He just loved music. And I asked him about that in a conversation not too long ago. Here's that conversation, followed by some of George Duke's wonderful music.
You know, you brought up something very interesting growing up in the 60s where you were. You said, in the same breath, in the same sentence, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Sonny Rollins, Miles Davis.
Right.
So, and I think that's indicative of you and a lot of other people during that time. You became Renaissance people musically. You didn't become musical snobs, as in,
right,
I'm only going to be a rocker, I'm only going to be a jazz man. You became, in essence, a Renaissance person that could live in many different worlds musically. I suppose that's just a manifestation of the 60s.
Well, you know, that's absolutely true. You know, I still had a little jazz snobbishness in and around that time, only in that I'd never worked with a named jazz group. You know, I always wanted that experience. I mean, I did certain dates, but I didn't serve my time in there. And so, for example, when I got a chance to join Cannonball Adderley, I jumped at the chance because I said, okay, this is my chance to serve my time in a named jazz group and really get the lessons that I need, you know, and Cannonball was perfect for that. So, but you know, after that, it was around 1973, I decided that it was time for me really to get out and see what was going on. I joined Frank Zappa, and a lot of the jazz people sort of went crazy and said, hey, what is this? How come he's doing this? But still, by growing up in San Francisco, I had this eagerness to try to see what was going on the other side. You know, music comes together, and that's what's happening now.
Well, George could play it all, from sweet pop music to funky, fiery jazz fusion and straight-ahead swinging jazz. And from the funky, fiery side of things, here's Hot Fire from his album Reach For It, George Duke on Jazz America from VOA 1. In 1958, the State Department of the United States government sent Dave Brubeck and his quartet on one of those famous musical missions into different parts of the world outside of the USA. They went to Turkey, Iran, Iraq, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Ceylon, and came back not only with wonderful memories, but also influences of the music of that area of the world. And from the album Jazz Impressions of Eurasia, that is the Dave Brubeck Quartet with the Golden Horn. I wanted to play that for you because A, it's a beautiful piece of music, and B, it's very important, and C, Dave Brubeck, like our special guest on this edition of Jazz America, George Duke, was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area in Concord, California. More coming up with George Duke in just a bit, but first, I want to invite you to get in touch with me by email. It's very simple. I'll give you the email address to which you can write with your questions, comments, or requests for music. Here's the address, jazzamerica@voanews.com. That's jazzamerica, the two words written as one word, @ voanews.com. jazzamerica@voanews.com. And here's a message I've received from an American listener, Jefferson Grendel, who listens to the show online in the USA on my Moja Radio website, where I post the program each week. You can listen to it all week long, mojaradio.com. And Jefferson wrote, when he noticed that I was going to salute George Duke this week, his sound was unique and he had a signature that was easily recognized if you were a fan of his music. I recall hearing a segment of his music on Dutch radio back in 1983, but didn't know what it was. The track was from the LP, A Brazilian Love Affair, which I had bought the same year, some months later. And he goes on to say, the man was unique. I recall an interview he did with you, Russ. I have the audio somewhere, and he was talking about a Duke Ellington concert that his mother took him to. He was fascinated by Duke and told his mom that one day he was going to be, quote-unquote, that guy. He was, but he was so much more. I'm sure, Russ Davis, you would agree. Well, Jefferson, you're right. I do agree. He became one of the most versatile and beloved artists in modern jazz. And since you mentioned his Brazilian love affair, I want to play a cut from that and also salute the fact that he was certainly a very versatile player, playing in so many different styles, from Latin music to Brazilian, as you'll hear, world music, straight-ahead jazz, funk, and fusion. Here is George Duke from Brazilian Love Affair on VOA's Jazz America. Herbie Hancock's famous composition Cantaloupe Island, interpretation by two modern jazz masters. George Duke on the keyboards, electric piano in this case, and Jean-Luc Ponty, the great French violinist, joining with him. That was a breakthrough performance from 1969 that catapulted both George and Jean-Luc Ponty into jazz fusion stardom as they performed live in Los Angeles at the Club Dantes. Many jazz luminaries came to hear this new French electric violinist who'd just come to town, and the rest is history, and you just heard some of it. Well, that's just one of the many collaborations that George Duke has enjoyed over the years with modern jazz masters. He's also worked with Frank Zappa, Stanley Clarke, Billy Cobham, the Brecker Brothers, Tom Scott, Lee Ritenour, Brian Bromberg, John Scofield, Christian McBride. And speaking of one of those, his close friend, Stanley Clarke, had a chance to work with him on many different occasions. They became the closest of friends, and I had the chance to speak with them when they played at the Blue Note in New York City in the springtime of 2013, just a few months before George passed away. Here's some of that conversation, followed by one of their beautiful collaborations. I went backstage after the performance to talk with Stanley and George, and the first thing I want to say is what a beautiful night tonight it was. It was almost like sitting at the house listening to you guys in your living room, wasn't it?
It's kind of like that.
That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, I have spoken to you guys now in four decades, so here we are.
You're old, man.
I'm old as dirt, but my thing is, how could you come up with a song list for 1 4-day stay at the Blue Note? How could you come up with a song list?
I have a knack for that. George always says, come on, Stanley, put it together.
He just wants to see me wear my glasses.
I wanted to see George work a little bit, so I gave him no mystery. But it was amazing, the guy reading it. I always forgot that George can read, as they say, fly shit.
Yeah,
just
right.
Throw it on a piece of paper and he can read it.
It's a good thing that folks around the world don't know what the word shit means. On VOA. Thank you, gentlemen, right, and it's great to see you as always.
Good to see you. You're looking good.
Take care.
Thank you, man. And here's one of their earliest collaborations, the title cut from the Stanley Clarke album from 1976, Journey to Love, on Jazz America, from VOA 1. Just another George Duke collaboration, this time with the esteemed drummer Billy Cobham, recorded live at the Montreux Jazz Festival in the 1970s. More George Duke next hour.